Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone. And actor out alone. Riders on the storm. There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad.
So we take a little trip back to the Vietnam War days. People have forgotten all about it already, most people, except the people that were in it, and some few people like myself who felt like I was almost in it because I knew all these guys in Camp Pendleton, Marines, before, or a lot of them before they went over. And the ones that came back, I got to talk to and interview. And that's what turned my thinking around on war, because before that I was a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Oh, yeah, good to the core. Defend America, until I found out it had nothing to do with defending America. It was all bullshit. The date is August the 14th, 2014, and it's a Thursday today. Yeah, I like Thursday. I just like the sound of that coming out of my mouth. Thursday. That's right. Beautiful day again here. Yesterday it rained all day. Yeah. I forgot to tell you that. I know you were waiting for that. But today it's a beautiful sunshiny day, and got out there and did a little work this morning, and everybody's happy and the birds are singing, and there you go. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And make sure you get your donations in for the show. Let's see, this is the 14th. Seemed to me that we had a cutoff date on the 15th. So if you don't have it in there, you better get it in there. Yeah, and we're at resist.com also. Well, I see that... Well, it's a funny thing, you know. I don't go out looking for arguments with the old right wing because I found out years ago it's a waste of time. But once in a while, they send me stuff and like they're including me in the conversation, in the debate. The trouble is, when I tell them what I know, especially about the history of how things went down in this country for our struggle, they get mad. They don't want to hear it. So don't send me the stuff in the first place. Quit sending me your stuff if you don't want me to comment on it. So anyhow, they had a big thing going on there that was pro and con on the Willis Carto and all that kind of stuff. And they sent that to me, and so I told them what I knew about the situation. Sent it out to them. I'm talking from real experience with the particulars in the case on both sides. I'm one of the few people that had face-to-face contacts with both sides. Well, that whole operation was between Los Angeles and later on Escondido, California. And the reason I was privy to so much is because several of the very heavy Cardo supporters lived in the Escondido area too, that I knew personally, older people who invited me to have lunch with them once in a while, and we'd talk about things, and they were privy to a lot of information that I didn't have, and really I didn't care, but I did hear it, so I can't deny that. And in L.A., it was before the IHR, there was the Omni Books, which was owned by Willis Cardo, and LaVon Furr was the lady who took care of the bookstore. And I used to go in there all the time buying books and talking to her. But being that I was only about 20 minutes from Escondido, I became acquainted with these fellows, and it's an odd situation. Now, in this debate about Cardo, I don't think you'll ever hear these guys on the right ever talking about the mystery man, Mr. Miller, and who is an Australian, and who at one time either owned or was the publisher or something of the Tidings Catholic newspaper in L.A. Well, anyhow, he had worked with Willis Cardo on the Spotlight newspaper. At one time had quite a pretty good circulation. And I found out through these guys in Escondido that that Cardo was he was a penny pincher, always was. He acts more Jewish than a lot of Jews I know don't act. Anyhow, he thought people in the staff were stealing from him because he was short on money. He was coming up short on money. So he went around and took all the locks off all the desks of the Spotlight newspaper staff so that he could get in and look into their desk, thinking that they were somehow cheating him out of money or something, which is a little bit absurd way to do it. And then I remember because I said, well, at one time I said, well, it should just give them all lie detector tests, you know. Well, Miller was the person he had hired to do the printing of the Spotlight newspaper. Either he owned the company or he jobbed it out to somebody or something, but Miller was involved. So some time went on, and Cardo was short about $200,000. And he couldn't figure out where it was going. Well, it was Miller that was stealing from him by padding the bills on the Spotlight newspaper. Yeah. So anyhow, I knew all that. And then Miller had a fight with Cardo. People usually that work with Cardo usually do after a while. He can't usually keep anybody around very long. So anyhow, so Miller was his enemy. And so about that time was the time that the Edison fortune broke loose with Jean Farrell. She was living over there in Switzerland. And Miller spilled his guts on the whole deal because he was mad at Cardo and said that Cardo had gone over to visit her because she wanted to support the IHR type operation, but she didn't want it to go to Cardo for his own private piggy bank. She wanted it to be for the struggle and the study of the history and so forth and things like that. Well, I don't think Cardo saw it that way, but he didn't say anything about it. But anyhow, he was told that, now, Willis, you're going to have to call this lady at least once a week because she lives almost alone. She's got a housekeeper. But if she should die, there's going to be a mad scramble to try to get that money because she didn't trust banks. she wouldn't bank in the United States, and she banked all this fortune, the Edison fortune, offshore in foreign banks. Well, it turns out that Willis was so cheap that he wouldn't call her. He wouldn't spend the money on the telephone call. Back then, it was pretty expensive. So, like any old lady, sooner or later she died. Well, then there was, a couple, 3 weeks, I'm not sure the exact time, until it was reported that she was dead. Well, it turned out that the housekeeper was on the pay of B'nai B'rith International. Not the ADL, I'm talking to the big boys. ADL is simply the investigative arm. And they might have been involved in it, but the main principle is always B'nai B'rith. And you don't hear hardly any right-wingers talking about B'nai B'rith, which is the big daddy, the big Masonic daddy of the Jews. So they ran around through their attorneys, was able to block and lock those accounts in all these banks around the world. And then it was up to Willis to try to get it loose. So he spent a small fortune doing that. I'm not privy to exactly how he did it, but like I said before, he tried to employ attorneys. Junot lived over there, and Junot was the attorney for the Goebbels estate. Yeah, Goebbels had an estate, and he had administered it all these years, and Willis Cardo asked him to take care of this problem for him and shake this money loose and break the hold that the Jews had on it in these banks. He said, fine, I'll do that. But Cardo wanted to do it for nothing. Can you imagine? This is an international economic situation here. It's really tough. Had one attorney. Now, Junot, I guess, was a good attorney. But Junot said, look, I can't do this for nothing. I got a family. He turned Cardo down. So Cardo went from there trying to hire cheap attorneys. And, of course, it just led from one debacle to another. But finally, somehow, they broke that money loose. And then Cardo was running fast and furious with all this money. Now, I'm not saying that everything that Cardo did with money was wrong or bad. It's just that he'd cornered all the money to himself, and it did not go to the general historical review struggle. And let me tell you something. I was not an agent for those guys. In fact, I don't think most of them like me, but I go back before there was a Institute for Hysterical Review, as I call it. I go back before, and I knew all the principals, and I knew who led it, and David McCollum and Tom Marcellus, and I knew all these guys. And I knew, as a sidelight, they had these Scientologists infiltrated. Tom Marcellus was an agent for the Scientology Church. And they had some interesting homosexuals working with it, too. So I'm not going to go into arguing about that one way or the other, but it's a fact. And most of them weren't racial. They weren't racist. They were critical or even hateful of the Jews. But when it came to the blacks or any white racial struggle, they weren't into that. And then that's why most of them didn't like me, the Webbers and so forth and like that. So anyhow, here's Miller. He makes up with Cardo some way, somehow, probably because Miller could have testified against Cardo and hurt him pretty bad. So evidently Cardo let him in on a chunk of the money. And so here goes Miller. Here goes Miller trotting around the world. I had dinner with him in Escondido, California once and got a lot more information from his side. He was married to a French woman. Nice lady, nice family, like that. But he lived in a big gated not a mansion, but a very nice home there in near Escondido. Anyhow, once this all broke loose, he takes off, and the IHR in L.A. is trying to find him to get the money, or get the amount of money that was should have been put in the treasury of the IHR. And here again, I'm not fighting for the IHR. I personally think it's probably a mistake, especially on the Jewish question, because you're never going to outdo the Jews on propaganda about whether 6 million Jews died or five Jews died. You're never going to do it. And every time you come out with one of your little pamphlets that gives the Jews the green light to come at you with 16 Hollywood movies. I mean, it was after the IHR formed that the movie Holocaust came out, Spielberg. So it would seem to me that it would have been better off just to leave sleeping dogs lie and let history finally gradually forget this stuff. But I believe that the IHR and this digging into this 6 million thing actually worked more for the Jews and the ADL and all of those people than it did for our side. Now, maybe this was innocent, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But I know one thing, I don't think it helped a bit. So now, Miller's the bad guy, and Cardo's the bad guy, and they did ask me, the IHR, to see if I could track him down. They were trying to get the money. Well, I didn't try to do it because I loved the people running the IHR. I did it because I was offered a finder's fee, and obviously, in the struggle, we can use money. But I never tracked him down, never got real close to him. I know last I knew he was hiding out in France. Maybe he went back to Australia. I don't know. I don't know how it came out between him and Cardo, whether they ever mended their fences or not. But I do know at some point Mrs. Cardo traveled to England with a sizable amount of money and evidently banked it in England. I don't know every little teeny bit, but I do know that there was a conspiracy going on. And then when the civil trial came about, when they sued Cardo, the IHR sued Cardo, the trial was only 10 miles from my house in Vista, California. So I said, whoa, hey, I'm going to go down there. So I went down there, sit in the audience, and incidentally, during that particular session, Mark Lane had been called by Willis Cardo to be a spokesman for his good nature and his goodness. And Cardo, I never will forget, here's this real kikey looking Jew, Mark Lane, and he's up there, and Cardo's got his arm around his shoulder. This is my best friend. And I think I should have had a picture of that. Here is this Nazi who claims he's not a Nazi. He's certainly not a national socialist. He's a national capitalist, hugging this big-time Jew and saying he was my best friend. Of course, that never appeared in the papers, and I'm the only one that ever talked about it. But you can go into the trial record in Vista, California, San Diego County, and you can pull out the files and read it yourself. So anyhow, I don't know where Miller ended up with his chunk of money, and I don't know exactly where Cardo hid his money and all that stuff, but and I don't know what the hell the IHR is doing, and I don't really care. It sounds good to have historical review, and a lot of their stuff was really good, especially when it wasn't about the Jews. I know you may say, whoa, we got to be about the Jews. Yeah, but every time you put out a book trying to poo-poo the 6 million, they come out, like I say, with $100 million movies, and just public opinion is just totally turned against you. So, and if the German nation won't stand up and they know the truth in Germany. And many of the big industrialists never went to prison, never went to jail. And many of the people involved in the Third Reich melded right back into German business and everything else. And if they're not going to stand up for the good name of Germany, why the hell are we going to spend our lives trying to clean up the German image? The fact remains that 55 million people died, at least, and a good share of them were white. And we're not talking about those so-called subhuman Russians, because a good share of them were just as white as any German. And so much for fighting a war for the race. It was a political war. You know, Hitler talked a lot about the war for the Germanic race. What about the rest of the white race? You know, we're not all, they're not all Germanic. I happen to be part Germanic, but it wasn't worth it, no matter what. World War II was not worth it. In fact, it was totally counterproductive and led to this tremendous loss of Aryan life all over Europe, all over Russia. I'd say probably two-thirds of the 20 million Russians that were killed in that war were white, you know. That was the German, these titled nobility in the Wehrmacht, these top generals, a lot of them, who wanted to think of the Russians as being subhuman and all that stuff. So I put my foot in it again and commented on this stuff. And if I dug around in my files and jogged my memory a little bit more, I could come up with more. But I don't think I need to, and I don't want to. I have no time to argue with these Cardo lovers and also these Hitler worshippers. Now, we can all have an opinion on Hitler. Mine is that he was a politician. He made mistakes. He made big mistakes and he made little mistakes, and some things he did right. But the fact remains, he distorted National Socialism. When he came to power, it was no longer really National Socialism, or they wouldn't have militarized, because the desire of the National Socialists before Hitler came to power was not to get into foreign adventures like the United States does all the time. It was to clean up Germany internally. Well, you know, most governments don't want to clean things up internally. Too many heads would roll. So if you can deflect it to outside the country and blame everybody else, then it's a lot easier to control the people. And that's, of course, what happened in Germany, that everybody else is wrong and we're right. Well, everybody was wrong and Germany was wrong too. Whatever you launch into a war that's going to kill millions of people, I say you're wrong, you know, because no matter what you say your end results want to be, it never turns out that way. So anyhow, the reason I'm saying all this again is because somebody, one of our associates, sent me a little snippet from a show that a right-wing lady puts on that she's a right-winger, she's a Hitler worshiper and all that kind of stuff, and I knew it would come again. They're attacking me and going way back to the order, which most of the people with these little radio shows today were probably in grade school when all this happened with the order and all that kind of stuff, saying that somebody gave me $250,000. Well, I wish somebody would give me $250,000. It sure don't match my lifestyle, I'll tell you that. But anyhow, these are things, rumors have been around for a long time. Well, as far as I know, nobody ever proved anything like that. Some of the court trials came out that different people had received money from the order, but I don't think you'll ever find anything that says Tom Metzger did, except rumors. But if I had, what would have been so wrong with that? Because this gal says, well, he didn't spend it on the movement. Well, first of all, how in the hell does she have any proof that I took it? And number two, how would she have any proof of how I spent it? I sure didn't spend it on new cars. That is the stupidest type of attack I've ever heard, because in an ongoing war for our race, anything, if somebody does dump $250,000 on me and I distribute it around to get things done and help people out, I'm sure not going to tell anybody. You got to stick, shut up, like we always say. So anyhow, she's going on and on about shit she don't know anything about. She's just mouthing the Cardo line because it's the Cardo cult. There's a trail of bleached bones behind that man. But since he puts out the Barnes Review and, you know, some of the articles are pretty damn good and stuff like that, all these disciples give him a break and say, well, he's Mr. Clean. Well, he's not Mr. Clean. If you want to say it doesn't make any difference what his morals are and whether he took all this money and for himself, okay, just like with Duke. He's a moral reprobate. He's a crook, which was proven in court. He hangs out with some of the seediest people around, this pornographer from Florida that helped run his operation down there. But people who worship David Duke, they don't care. They want morality in the white race. Well, wait a minute. The evidence does not show morality among most of these right-wing leaders. It shows just the opposite. Corruption and using people and abusing people and just hyping people up to get their money and so forth like that. And so you get somebody to ghostwrite you a book every once in a while and you get it out there, and the worshipers will always, oh my God, how wonderful this is, how wonderful this is. Anyhow, I'm not going to mention this gal's name. I could, but I'm not. She don't know what she's talking about. She don't know her ass from her hole in the ground on a lot of things. And she was, I don't know how old she is, but she's probably a lot younger than I am, so that would put her in grade school or high school back when the order was trying to do something in this country. And remember, the Cardo factions of the right wing condemned Robert J. Matthews and the order, and they've never lifted a finger to help the prisoners in jail, in prison. So if you legitimately do something that's good for the race and you go to prison, those people drop you like a hot potato. Even Pierce wouldn't write prisoners. He only wrote one prisoner. I think that was Richard Scutari, one of them. But he wouldn't write them, and he even called them bad names. So the right wing has never picked up their wounded. And with Cardo, he's created the wounded around him. Everybody who's ever worked with him got screwed. So anyhow, that's it. And so I can take it. Don't bother me. They've been throwing the same shit at me for 30 years. And I guess I'm sort of like the Teflon man. It just slides off onto the floor. Okay, that's it. I'm trying not to talk about this anymore because it's boring, really. As an addendum to this, there's so many of these radio shows now put out by people who just come on the scene in the last few years, and they don't know anything about the history of anything other than the books they get out of the library and what some right-wing leader tells them. And so I had one guy that was saying what a fraud I was and everything else. I'm trying to figure out what the hell fraud is and how I could be a fraud. Usually fraud has something to do with funds or something. And if he thinks I'm a fraud for money, boy, he's really screwed up. But I don't know why guys like that will come up with that bullshit and attack Tom Metzger, because I have not attacked them, and I consider most of them to be part of the right wing. And same way with this lady. She's part of the right wing, and whenever anybody criticizes the right wing leadership, they circle the wagons. Well, I want to let her know that I am not a right winger. I would be, I guess, considered a left wing national socialist, sort of along those lines. I don't adopt any particular political position, absolutely. I'm an individual, and I make my own mind up as I go along. So anyhow, that's that. Come to think of it, the one guy who has a radio show, in fact, I've been on his radio show, he probably wasn't even born when the order was around. So, you know, that's interesting. But, you know, none of the right wing never did support revolutionary action by Robert J. Matthews. They all denied him. They all talk about revolution. They talk about rising up and all that kind of stuff. But when anybody does it, they don't have anything to do with them. They condemn them and they call them common criminals and everything else. So just remember that if you're thinking of being working with these right wingers, if you get in a jam, you're screwed. You're really screwed. Speaking of history, I was rummaging around in my books, which I do once in a while, and I got a hell of a lot of them. This paper fell out of one of the books, and I thought it was sort of prophetic. Because somebody had sent me this years ago. I have no idea how long ago. And it says, here are some facts in regard to the People story in People magazine on the story behind the Hollywood propaganda called Mississippi Burning. Remember that? You know, betrayal's been around for a long time, especially, well, in any group, but in the right wing it seems to be very common. Alton Wayne Roberts made a deal with the FBI special agent Proctor and others that he and his brother, who was not arrested, be given $30,000 in return for setting up Leroy Terrence. Terrence was a member of the Mississippi White Knights of the KKK, and the FBI and the ADL both wanted him and Sam Bowers taken out of action at any cost. And that was because they were effective. They had a guerrilla warfare operation going on by night and regular business by day. In an ambush, these murdering dogs shot and killed white activist and local school teacher Kathy Ainsworth, who was with Leroy Terrence. And she was pregnant at the time. A lot of people don't talk about that. The assassination attempt failed, and Leroy, through those several wounds, survived. Kathy did not. There was evidence that over 100 shots had been fired at the couple, so they weren't out just to arrest them. They were out to kill them. And that's when the Jews and the FBI worked together. And, of course, the FBI and the Jews all work with organized crime, too, from time to time, like Nixon. He worked with organized crime his whole career. He was connected to the back door to organized crime. The head kike of the operation was A.I. Botnick, who was at the time regional director of the New Orleans ADL. The blood money was given to a local Jew boy by the name of Meyer Davidson. Davison, who lived in Neshoba County, gave the money to government killer or agent Proctor to turn over to the Roberts brothers. It was the direct treason of these bastards that enabled the government to find the dead vermin and start the persecution of the white people in the first place. Then Mayor Clayton Lewis was acting as informer for Agent Proctor and may have played a part in the death of Matt Murphy, head lawyer for the legal defense team. So you see, betrayal and like that is very common in any struggle. I'm not saying just the right wing, but it's really common in the right wing because it attracts a lot of people who boast about how brave they are and how they'll never give anybody up and all that. And in fact, the right wing's betrayal rate is very high. Almost everybody, anybody that's a right winger, and he may be given the biggest speeches and the best speeches in the world, but when they grab him and arrest him, he spills his guts immediately. How about a little Aesop's fable here by Tommy? Now, you want to make an omelet? Well, you get the eggs, right? And you got a stove, right? And you can turn on that gas and wait. And nothing's going to happen. You can look at the eggs. You can feel the eggs. And the whole story, but if you want to make an omelet, you got to crack the eggs. Sooner or later. Now, you can stand around and talk about how great eggs are and how good eggs are for your diet and what a beautiful stove you've got and it puts out a nice flame. You can talk infinitum. But sooner or later, you're going to have to crack the eggs to get them on the frying pan to make yourself an omelet. You're never going to get an omelet. So sooner or later, whether you like it or not, it all boils down to cracking the eggs. A lot of people out there, especially in, I guess, in the right wing, that don't realize the influence of the Jews in the South. They think of New York City and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's a book that I've had for years, and it's something you probably can pick up at a used bookstore, called Members of the Tribe on the Road in Jewish America by Zev Chafetz, Chafets. And this guy came to the United States and he did a real service, probably for the Jews, but also for us. He has chapters on every area of the country and how he went looking for Jews and pockets of Jews and old families of Jews that have lived in areas a long time. And there's a lot of good intelligence information in this book, or at least was. It's starting, you know, a lot of the people are dead now. But anyhow, let me read you here. Now, they're talking about this family by the name of Hart. Doesn't sound Jewish, does it? Well, sorry. The Harts are not just Jews, but Southern Jews, like Macy Carroll, is rooted in both traditions, a combination reflected in his home. There is a shalom doormat on the front back porch, and his living room is decorated in a mixture of Jewish antebellum Southern decor. Now, let me remind you now that a lot of this Jewish thing in the South centered around, not totally, but around Jackson, Mississippi. And guess where the White Knights were at? Shigel lithographs hang next to J.W. Buell's Louisiana and the Fair. And Irving Howe's World of Our Fathers shares a shelf with an ornately framed photograph of a young Saucy Carroll at the Texas Centennial in 1936. There is also a wedding picture of Carroll's daughter, who recently graduated from the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, and her husband, a conservative rabbi. Carroll proudly told us the young couple keeps kosher and observes the Sabbath. His daughter is a throwback to Isaac T., certainly the most observant Jew the Hart clan has produced in the last 100 years. The Harts have deep roots in the South, but they are comparative newcomers. Jews, most of them Sephardim, from the Caribbean and Europe, began settling in the southern seaport towns in the 17th century and gradually moved inland. Some were merchants, others became planters and farmers, and they took an active part in the political and cultural life of their region. In the 18th century, Judah Toro of New Orleans gained national fame as one of America's first philanthropists. To me, a philanthropist is a guy who first steals the money and then he gives a little of it back. Establishing charitable institutions, including the Jewish orphanage where Carol was raised. 50 years later, Judah P. Benjamin, you know, something the Klan seems to want to forget, not talk about. Talk about the Jews in the North all night long. Judah P. Benjamin was elected Secretary of State of the Confederacy, and later he was made Secretary of War. We've been a part of things down here ever since the very beginning, Carol said proudly. Even before the Civil War, a wave of German Jewish peddlers came south, and many of them stayed and established small stores in the towns and hamlets of the region. Later, they were joined by a large group from Eastern Europe. Together, they formed communities centered around Reformed temples, tight-knit little enclaves, where people knew each other and forged family alliances through marriage. That was the Jewish South of Carol's boyhood. There you go. And incidentally, I've told you before, General Ulysses S. Grant, when he was a lieutenant, was stationed in Mississippi, and he was stationed in Jackson, and he made very fast friends with the Jews of the area. And then when Ulysses S. Grant was transferred to San Francisco and made captain, he became even more a friend of the Jews, of the big mercantile Jews in San Francisco. So when anybody tries to tell you that because he told a few Jew peddlers to get off the front lines, they were in the way in the Civil War, that somehow he was anti-Jewish, is bullshit. He was very pro-Jewish. And that might answer some of the situations in the Civil War and his corrupt presidency, one of the most corrupt presidencies the United States ever had. And that was the era when corporations became big and all that kind of stuff. So anyhow, that's a little side trip there. So anyhow, that was the area around Jackson was a hotbed of Jewish activity. And so that's where the White Knights of Mississippi directed their wrath, which was smart, really, in a way, because it wasn't the blacks. Other than petty crime and things like that, and occasional rape, which could easily be taken care of, the blacks were not a big problem. Unless you consider the very fact that they're there a big problem, and there should have been total separation from the very beginning, but the financial people of this country never wanted total separation or any kind of return to Africa, no matter how good it would have been for the blacks. Another book you want to look into if you want to read books and learn something, people who just came out of the right wing, they probably won't read these, but they don't read these books over on the right much. This book is Terror in the Night, The Klan's Campaign Against the Jews by Jack Nelson. Jack Nelson was a reporter for the L.A. Times. Now, I must say this book is reasonably fair. It's, not going to say the Klan was a great outfit or anything like that. But I read it about, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. and it seemed to be rather fair. So if you want something, just like the Kevin Flynn book on the order, I don't have that book handy here right at this moment. I'm rearranging my books, so I've got them in the center of my operating room here, and I have them separated by history and different situations so I can go to them much quicker, because there's a lot of things I can put on these shows where I read a little extract from a book, but if I can't find the book, I'm screwed. Yeah, so anyhow, Terror in the Night by Jack Nelson. Another book that I've been looking for here, it's a paperback book, and it's the book that puts the lie to most of the right-wing bullshit about Stalin was poised to invade Europe and take on Germany, which doesn't even make sense. Number one, he didn't have the power, the real power to do it. And as I recall, he just purged his whole upper military guys and had several of them hung. So from a position of having the kind of military leaders he needed to do such a thing is ridiculous. Plus the fact that the Soviet Union was never known to attack a country that was in full power, a country that was able to resist. They'd always attack small countries and grab small countries like they did after World War II. So there's a book, it's called The History of the Soviet Union, and I'll find it sooner or later here, and I'll it's quite an exhaustive book. And it shows definitely a part of the book where, yes, they had moved some troops up not too far from the borders, but it was in no way a force able to attack Germany. It would have been ridiculous. Germany was at peak power. And just as you notice, when they went east, they just went through like a hot knife through butter. Until they made this, Hitler made the stupid idea of splitting his forces, send part of them down to the Caucasus, which they needed to send some to the Caucasus to get the oil. But the rest of them, instead of sending them straight to Moscow and politically destroying Stalin, they concentrated on Stalingrad, which was not a military important city at all. And they wasted their whole gains that they'd made coming through from the West on Stalingrad, which ultimately led to the loss of the war. Anyhow, I'll get that book out and I'll read you a few pages of. So when you talk to these Hitler lovers, and they're all around, you know, everybody's got to have a daddy. A lot of times people can't think for themselves. They have to have a daddy. You know, to a Soviet Union communist, and Stalin was daddy. To a lot of Chinamen, Mao Zedong was daddy. And even and a lot of the young skinheads that I knew back 20, 30 years ago, they were, most of them, or a lot of them, coming from broken homes, and they were looking for another daddy, and Hitler was their spiritual daddy. So that's one of the psychological problems especially our males of this race have to deal with. So anyhow, my position is simple. There's no leader in this world that if I find fault with them, I won't criticize them. And there's no leader in this world, if he does something good or she does something good, I won't say it's good. And so the same with Hitler. I don't judge people on some kind of a mystical, godlike type thing. I just judge them as an individual and what did they do and what happened and what they did wrong and what they did right. And so the right wing say, oh, I hate Hitler. Well, I hate what happened, the effects of Hitler and his crazy, especially move to the east. because of the amount of white people that died needlessly. As far as Hitler's concerned, he was damaged goods from the very beginning. He had PTSD from the First World War. I mean, he was gassed. I mean, if anything going to give you PTSD is being gassed or having an arm blown off or something. Plus, he was taking those shots from Dr. Morrell, and then before that, and along with it, Dr. Jacobson, the Jew, pumping him full of methamphetamine. So Hitler, in a way, was a victim in some ways himself due to this problem of his treatment and so forth. And he had he had Parkinson's disease too, several years before the war was over. I mean, his arm was twitching and like that. So anyhow, he was a dead man walking. So anyhow, don't worship any leader. Don't worship them. You can respect them. You can even follow them. Hopefully you're side by side and not single file. But to worship them, no. No, that's a mistake. You know, the difference between a liberal and a conservative type, I hate to use titles, but you know, on that making an omelet deal? Well, a liberal's the kind who says, I just can't stand to crack the egg. I don't want to hurt the egg. Egg is pretty. It's pretty nice. And look at all the work the hen went through to have that egg. So I'm not going to crack the egg. So he never gets a omelet. The conservative right-winger says, I'd sure as hell like to crack that egg. I really want to crack that egg, and I'm hungry. But I don't have the balls to crack that egg because something might go wrong. You know. So anyhow, that's a little bit of that. Oh, yeah, and the conservative right-winger may say, I don't have the balls to crack that egg, but I hope somebody does, and then I'll secretly in my closet say how great it was, but in public I'll say, oh, that's a tragedy. I want to warn you a little bit about something I've noticed. You know, early on, maybe a year ago, I got sort of enthused about Russia TV, RT, on the internet, and I thought it was really good, and not that I agreed with them on everything, but I've noticed the party line has changed, especially on race, whereas they usually didn't comment on something going on in the United States. Now this sounds just like MSNBC about the poor black people, the poor niggers. They're going on and on and on, just like MSNBC. Now, I think that's very hypocritical because you know how long that kind of a riot would last in Russia? You know, RT's become very hypocritical. And so I'm not near as happy with them as I used to be. So, I mean, they're going on just as bad as all the progressives on the poor Negro, poor Negro, poor Negro. I mean, I tend to have common sense and take things as they come and would say, let's investigate the situation. If the Negro pulled a gun or in some way absolutely endangered the life of some cop, then the cop would have the state's authority, the system authority, to shoot him or subdue him. But if the guy was just standing around calling cops names or shaking his fist at him, then obviously it's bullshit and they don't have any civil or natural right to kill him. But you see, before anything like that can be studied and find out really what happened, these Negro worshipers out there just go crazy. And of course, the rioters, they don't give a shit about that guy. You know that. I know that. They just want to steal things. There's some people just want to destroy things to be destroying things, period, whether they're black or white. And these people, they're a large percentage of the people in the ghetto, if they see an opening to where they can go into a storefront and steal everything, they do. It's got nothing to do with crying over the Negro that got killed. In fact, I think sometimes they like for a Negro to get killed once in a while this way, and then they can gather together, have a big riot, and steal half the stuff in town. But this stuff's not going to go on forever. It's not going. There's nothing you can do about this national mourning bullshit for this Negro, because you know as well as I do that really almost no white person really cares. He's going to say he cares, and the preachers are going to pray that they care and all that kind of bullshit, but they don't care. They have their own lives. They're going about their own situations. They got their own problems. But the press will herd them together, and they'll scream right along with the niggers. In fact, more white people scream about it than black people. And that's it. So for our side, I don't care. Let them go. Maybe if there was 1,000 niggers, 10,000 niggers out there tearing the town down, robbing everything in sight, something might get going. But until that time, forget it. Don't worry about it. It's not your situation. And let the sheep go crazy. They're going to go crazy over something anyhow. So they might as well go crazy over something. So they're not going to change until they get a boot in the head, boot on the neck, and they have to change. And that time is not yet. Not quite yet. Well, that's it, about it for now. 14:05, and I'll be back with you tomorrow on Freya's Day. Now, Slingblade says that's his favorite day. Well, he likes all those good-looking she-wolves in the bunker here. You know, he knows I keep this place well stocked with she-wolves down here, and especially on Freya's Day, and he's jealous as hell. 14:05, and shut up, and anybody that can find out where that $250,000 that I got went, well, let me know, because I'm in my senility. I forgot where I buried it, I guess.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Treasures here, dug our treasures.